Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
So that was What a Wonderful World by the great Satchmo, Louis Armstrong. And it is a wonderful world because we've got Natalie Cutler-Walsh with us. Natalie, welcome to In the Psychotherapist Chair.
Thank you, Jerry. So good to be here.
This is, in terms of the different people I invite, I keep a slot open now more and more for hosts on the RCR so that listeners can get to know you and find out more about you. I love your show and I love everything you cover. There's always so much hope and so much positivity in what you do, and I really value that, and I'm sure many listeners do as well. So here's a chance to get to know you. So we're going to be nosy. We're going to pry into your life, because anything you don't want to talk about, you don't have to. But just as we settle in a little bit, how about you give the listeners a little sort of thumbnail sketch of what your day's like? What's your life like at the moment? Because many of us are living a very different life to what we thought we would be a few years back. And I just wondered if you could give us a little picture of just what your life is like.
Yeah, thank you, Jerry. And I love your show too. I feel like your show and my show, we're like the cup of tea show, you know, meaning that's what you said one time. People go there, but they go to our shows when they want a bit of uplifting and a bit of positivity and inspiration. So thank you. Amazing to be here. My life is very much as it was. And I mean that in a really good way. I work for myself. I do what I want. I say what I want. So that is the same. So in terms of the way the day starts, I haven't had a watch since I left Outward Bound, where I used to work, back in 2003. So I start my day au naturel, meaning I don't have an alarm clock. I just wake up when I wake up. My kids are teenagers, but I generally tend to wake up before they leave the house. They don't really need me anymore. So I love that. I love that about my life. I don't start work until 10. So nobody can book me. So I'm a business coach, a business and visibility coach. I also help people with vitality. And on my booking system, it's like, nah, like nothing is available until 10 in the morning. And I love that because I do love to cruise into the day. I'm a bit of a night owl. I love staying up late. And I love just in the morning, I might have a hot tub and then I might have a sometimes I have an early morning business call, like with America or something like that, where I'm the learner, but no one can book me as a coach, if you know what I mean, until 10 o'clock. So I really love to go walking with my dog in the local reserve. My favorite thing is to get off the streets and get into the bush as such and get her off the leash. And yeah, I'm just really, even though I'm a go-getter, I really cruise into my day.
Wonderful. Oh, I'm already with you on that hot tub.
Yeah. And then another one at night.
Yeah, nice one. Nice one. So how old are you, Natalie?
Wow, straight into it, Jerry. Okay. So last year in September, September 29th, I turned 50. And my kids always tease me because I always buy myself a cake from the local cheesecake shop. And when I turned, I think it was 47 or something like that, I got them to write 47 rocks. Like 47 rocks on the cake. And so every year we get a cake that says whatever, you know, 48 rocks. Yeah. So now it was 50 rocks. So we had 50 rocks last year, and all week, or anyone who asks me anything, oh, how's things? How are you? I'm like, oh, I just turned 50. My kids always tease me because I'm always telling everyone that it's my birthday. So I really believe in birthday week, if not birthday month, when it is your birthday. And yeah, I'm pretty like loud and proud about how old I am. It's not something that's ever been a problem for me. And yeah, I'm just getting started.
Yeah, I subscribe to the view that every wrinkle, every scar, every sign of aging is a badge of honor for life. I think, you know, we earn our wrinkles, and every wrinkle tells a story. And that's my kind of view on that. So, yeah. But then I would say that because I'm over 60.
Yes. And I have products that can help with that, you know. People are usually surprised. Actually, people, it's funny because people usually think I'm taller and they think I'm younger when they meet me. They're like, oh, I thought you'd be bigger. They always say that. I thought you'd be taller, or I thought you'd be bigger. You're so tiny. I sometimes get that. I don't like that, obviously. But often when I say that I'm 50, people, they can't believe it. Probably because I'm such a kid in my behavior. I'm a bit of a goof.
Yeah, you don't look 50. I don't know what 50 looks like, but you, and I can't see many wrinkles. I'm searching hard, but I can't see any wrinkles. So very good, very good. So Natalie, one of the things that always interests me here in New Zealand is how people ended up here. And there's so many stories as to how or why people ended up here, even if those stories go back a long time. And I know from your accent that you've come here more recently than anciently. So tell us a little bit about how you got to New Zealand and what that was all about, you coming to New Zealand.
Yeah, it's a great story. And for me, it really, I guess it started in my final year of university in Canada, when I really was like, we were at that, what are you going to do when you graduate stage? And I decided, and I can take this and onto a tangent, but we'll see where we go with it. I decided that I wanted to go to New Zealand to discover my heritage. And that was going to be my next move. And when I say discover my heritage, so my parents are Kiwis, which I often have to explain because of my very strong accent. So my parents were born in New Zealand, as were their parents, as were their parents. And originally, I think, from Wales. So everyone is Kiwi. I don't have any Canadian relatives. Even my sisters, we were all born in Canada. So I suppose we are each other's Canadian relatives, but we don't have any more. And yeah, I just really wanted to discover my heritage because all I'd ever known is every 5 years when I was growing up, we would go to New Zealand every 5 years for maybe a couple of weeks. And I would get to know my cousins and I would see the aunts and uncles, and then we wouldn't see them for 5 years unless they came over. And some of them did, which was so amazing. And so for me, I was like, I actually want to go and live, not just visit. I want to go and live in my country of genetic origin, I suppose. And I decided to go for 1 year. And as many travelers know, when you decide to do something for just a limited time, sometimes that time can become expansive. And I really am a big believer in we are here in the world to learn and grow. And we are here. And to a certain extent, things are predestined, meaning, you know, we end up where we are meant to be. And sometimes relationships end or jobs end, and they are basically directing us where we're meant to go. So I do believe I was meant to be in New Zealand. I do believe I was meant to be in New Zealand at this time, meaning over the last four intense years, and to have all the experiences I've had along the way. So I came for 1 year. I actually closed the chapter, and I used those terms intentionally, like that's literally the verbiage we used, on a lovely relationship. And I eventually, you know, I think it was maybe almost a whole year into my stay, I met the man who would be my future husband, and I ended up staying. And fast forward, I've been here, I think it's 27 years. I'm not amazing at math, but I came in 1998, I do believe. And I came to Timaru, and I always joke, I'm a keynote speaker. So often I'll do talks, you know, from the stage, and I talk about, and I use my arms a lot, and I go, you know, and I move from Toronto, Canada, and then I move my arms across in a big rainbow over to Timaru, New Zealand. And everyone always laughs because it was quite a shift, obviously, from Toronto, Canada. And when I say Toronto, like I lived in the city, like Yonge and Bloor, like Rosedale, like right in the heart of the city. I didn't go to university in Toronto. I went further out, which was amazing. Had such a great time. There's a song coming later from my university years. And yeah, I moved to Timaru to study the outdoors. I was an outdoor instructor, rock climbing, kayaking, sailing, etc. And that's basically how I ended up in New Zealand, because of a desire to discover my heritage. I ended up staying, and I've only been back twice to Canada ever since then.
Wow, what a story. Hunting, coming back for your roots, eh? Mm-hmm. Did you find out much about your family's roots here before they went to Canada? And had you, and you got two brothers or sisters?
Two sisters. I'm in the middle.
Yeah, you're in the middle. Oh, well, I'm in the middle of three boys, so we're both middle ones. I think the middle ones are always great communicators. What do you think?
Oh, I think we can spot each other a mile away. The old middle children.
Yes, yes.
Loving a bit of attention here and there.
Did you discover much about your family's roots in New Zealand? Because it sounds like prior to your parents going to Canada, your Kiwi roots go back quite a way. Is that right?
Yes. Well, I mean, I guess our ancestors came over in the, you know, back in, I mean, I think we're in fourth generation. So I actually didn't dive in too much around the family tree, although one of my uncles has done all of those things. I think for me, it was really more of an immersive experience because I'd already met, of course, all the cousins, which was amazing. And we have caught up over the years. In fact, I just was down in Dunedin a few weeks ago, checking out the uni for my daughter. And I saw one of my cousins who I hadn't seen in 15 years because he moved to the UK. And he's since had three kids and he lives in Dunedin now. And I got to see, you know, where my parents met. I mean, they met and they went on their first date at Cowell's Pavlova shop or cafe or whatever in Dunedin. My dad was studying to be an orthopedic surgeon. And a lot of people in Dunedin know my dad because he was kind of a quote unquote famous runner. So he was a steeplechaser. He was in the Olympics for New Zealand and the Commonwealth Games, Commonwealth Mexico 68, I think. And my mom was studying to be an occupational therapist. So we have the nurturer, my mother, in doing OT, and we have my dad, the confident, opinionated orthopedic surgeon. And so that's really my roots. That's kind of who I am. I'm a nurturer. I'm a motivator. And I'm also very strong in my opinions, similar to my dad, very confident as well. So that was really cool to actually go back just a few weeks ago to where they met. And then my dad ended up back in the day, he had to go to overseas to study for 5 years to expand his skills as an orthopedic surgeon. So they had to go somewhere else. They chose Canada. They went for 5 years. They liked it so much, they stayed for 35 years. And while they were there, they had three beautiful daughters, right? And I'm the middle child. So that's how we ended up being born there. And interestingly, however, we all ended up coming back separately. So at the age of, what was I when I finished? 23, I decided I was going to go and discover my heritage. So I came over by myself. My family didn't move over. Meanwhile, my other sister, who's younger, had tried 1 year at UniCall in Dunedin. She didn't really like it. She ended up moving back to Canada. My other sister moved to New Zealand to study medical school at Otago about a year after me. So she came separately. And then my parents came the year after that. They moved to Wellington and they were originally from Dunedin, my dad, Ahopi Beach, my mom, Whakatane, Ahopi Beach. And they ended up living in Wellington, which is where they live now. So I've never lived in the same city as any of my nuclear family since I was, you know, in my 19 years old, I think, because I've never lived in Wellington. But we're still very close, even though one of my sisters is in America and I haven't seen her in a couple of years.
It's so fascinating when you talk about your parents in Dunedin and your father as what sounds like a very strong character and your mother as a powerful kind of nurturer. And you relate both of those strands to who you are now. And it's so often the case when you have parents that have strong characteristics that as children, we kind of find a way to blend them together so that we make sense.
Well, I'm open to your views on it, Jerry.
Well, I'm not really here to give my views on it, but it fascinates me how you described it. You described it really beautifully, actually, Natalie. You described how your work today is all about that kind of coaching and caring and looking after people, but you also described yourself as highly opinionated, which puts you firmly in the RCR category, I think, in good company.
Right at home.
I'm wondering about growing up. People talk a lot, don't they, between the culture of Canada and New Zealand, how very connected these two cultures are. And I just wonder, what was it like to be in Canada growing up as someone of Kiwi descent? And what was it like when you came over as a young adult?
Yeah, I loved Canada. So like I had, and yeah, I'm sure you get a lot of people saying this, I had an amazing childhood. I did have an amazing childhood. I loved Canada. I loved the seasons. I loved, you know, raking piles of huge leaves and jumping in them. I loved making, you know, forts with all the snow and the ice right outside your doorstep. Like we had a skating rink at the park, you know, we would just walk 10 minutes down to the local park because it turns into a skating rink in the winter. So I just loved the seasonality of that. You know, so many different phases, and I call them ages and stages of our life. You know, I loved primary school. I'm still in contact. It probably won't surprise you because I'm such a super connector. I'm still in contact with so many of my friends from primary school, as well as high school, as well as uni. So those are all different ages and stages. And then in Canada, the other thing. So what you say to someone in Canada is you go, oh, where did you live in Canada? And then you go, what camp did you go to? So we're very into what camp did you go to? And what does that mean? It means summer camp, because summer camp is huge in Canada. And when I speak for Canada, I can't speak for Canada. Literally, I've only been in Ontario and Montreal. I've never traveled outside. I've never been to Vancouver, any of the prairies, and like anywhere. So I'm really only speaking from my own personal experience. But a lot of people, especially if you live in Ontario, where there's so many lakes, you know, we go to camp in the summer. And I would go every summer for 3 weeks. And then eventually I became a camp counselor. And I would be there all summer long. So for about 8 weeks in the summer. And yeah, so that's a big thing you ask people. So amazing times growing up. And then moving to New Zealand, honestly, this was my first reaction. Where are all the Black people? Like just in terms of the diversity of just skin color. I feel like there's so much diversity when people start talking. If you hear it in the accents, there's a lot of people from all around the world. But visually, when I first arrived, remember, I lived in Timaru, but I do remember after that, I did live in Christchurch for a bit. And I was like, where are all the Black people? Like, it was just so fascinating to me coming from, remember where I came from, downtown Toronto, where you get on the subway car and you see every, you know, culture from all around the world. And yeah, so that was just something I really noticed straight away. But other than that, growing up, all my friends would always say, are your parents from Australia? And I'd be like, no, they're from New Zealand. And people would always ask my parents, because their accent is more hybrid than mine, I would say. So their accent is Kiwi, but soft, really soft Kiwi. So the Canadians would think they were from Australia. And then I come here and everyone thinks that I'm American. And I literally got off the plane like yesterday because my accent's so strong. It's because I was too old. I was 23. I think you have to be about, I don't know, 13 or even 10 to lose your accent. But on top of that, the Kiwi accent, as you probably know, is quite hard to mimic. And so I imagine if I'd been to Australia or the UK or somewhere, that my accent might have picked up a little bit more of that. But the Kiwi accent is really hard to impersonate. So I obviously just stick to what I know, which is Canadian.
Wonderful. I'm wondering, when you think about your parents, for example, I wonder, would you say they've been the biggest influence in your life, or have there been other people that you would say have really influenced you as you've traveled through your life?
I would say they've been the biggest. The other one that stands out is my grandmother. So she was from, actually, so interesting, isn't it? I've ended up living literally a 5-minute drive away from where she used to live when I used to come and visit her, which is so crazy. Also, wait for it. She got married in Timaru, where I ended up going to study outdoor at Auraki Polytech. I studied 3 years of outdoor recreation there. It's just so crazy, isn't it? Life. So she would be one of my mentors, icons. I'm not sure what the word is. I tend not to, and I've always been like this. It's not just a COVID thing, but I tend not to idolize or really pedestal famous people. Like, I just don't. It's not like, oh, I've always loved Oprah or like, nah, like nobody like that. It's just been actual real people with Jerry Pives. It's just been real people that have really taken that key place in my life. And my grandmother, because she was one of the most spiritual people in my entire family. And a little bit, you know, she was really into the Celestine Prophecy at the time and The Secret and whatever. And she was an artist. She lived in Queenstown, and I would go and visit her every summer. I'd live with her for a little bit because I used to guide bike tours for wealthy Americans, and we'd go through Queenstown. So I'd stay with my grandmother when I finished my tour, and she would stand there painting The Remarkables on silk. And she was an incredible artist with watercolor as well, like when she came to Canada. And she lived summer to summer to summer. So she'd come every summer to Canada. And she would paint in our house. She painted down in the basement, and she painted in our bathroom, just beautiful things on the walls. And we just had a very close bond and a very close connection. So her and my parents, and then just key people along the way that I've met, friends, the incredible people I have the absolute honor of hanging out with regularly in my business life have really shaped things. That's really been in the last 12 years. My kids, yeah, just real people.
And talking of your kids, you got three teenage kids. I bet that that sounds like a full-time job in itself, isn't it?
Well, COVID plus menopause plus three teenage kids. I said to someone the other day, oh, it's so much easier. Teenager, so far, knock on wood, is so much easier when they were little. And when I say when they were little, because remember, I was a combination of my brownie baking mother and my, you know, work hard, you know, play, you know, work hard, earn the money father. So I've been trying to straddle both of those roles, which is an intense goal to begin with. But, and by the way, I do not bake brownies. I am the worst. My kids are like, please don't bake, because these are skills I don't have. But when I say my brownie baking mother, literally we would arrive home from school and she would have these, they were actually called blondies, you know, like butterscotch brownies. Anyway, but when they're little, kids are, you're rubbernecking, you know, and I'm safety net. I'm very safety conscious. And I would always be like, you have to know where they are. You have to know what they're doing. They're not going to fall off the, you know, fall down the steps or whatever, get hit by the swing at the park. And so now it's just so much easier. And I just go out of my way to try to spend time with them when they're not busy doing other things. So yeah, I'm loving the teenage years.
Yeah, I found with my teenage kids, the real art that I had to develop was being able to instantly drop everything for that precious moment when they wanted a conversation. That didn't matter if I wanted the conversation, that was irrelevant. It was capturing those moments when suddenly they turn up and they start chatting and you think, ah, they really want a bit of contact. So I'd have to cancel everything I was doing and just literally try. And it was such a skill to develop.
You take what you can get compared to when they're little and they're like, dad, dad, or mom. And you're like, yeah, hang on.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was a real shift. So you mentioned again, I'm sorry to bang on about this, but it is what interests me enormously, which is kind of what, as well as this program is really about what makes you tick. And by the way, I should probably mention, just in case someone has tuned in, if you're wondering what on earth you're listening to me, Jerry Pives, talking to Natalie Cutler-Welsh on real people in the psychotherapist chair. And Natalie's taking us through her childhood and her life. And I'm wondering about, what do you think, if you think of your parents as giving you a gift, what do you think your father gave you and what do you think your mother gave you? If you were to be able to, I mean, it's really hard to sum it up, isn't it?
No, it's easy. It's so easy.
Oh, go for it.
Okay, my dad, confidence. My mom, love.
Wow, that's sorted.
Well, my mom, I've never met anyone and I'm the go-to girl. That is literally my business name, Go-To Girl Limited. And why did I call myself that? Because I know everybody. You know, like I know so many people and I connect them. And so I know a lot of people. That's the context. And of all the people I know, never have I ever met anyone other than my sister, my older sister. So nice. Like someone that is just so non-judgmental. So like, I've never heard my mom say anything bad about anyone. And neither have I really ever seen her cry or get angry. And I know we're not supposed to get too personal, but and we could go down that path because, you know, I think expressing emotions is really important. So, but I'm just saying like, wow. So I grew up with a role model who was ever available, ever helpful, you know, sewing dresses for my school prom and all the things. And so lovely and loving. And then a dad that was so hardworking and so confident in what he thought and what he was doing and where he was going. Obviously, he's an Olympian and an orthopedic surgeon, so it's not surprising. But he's also really funny. And all the people that work with him, you know, in the theater, he's retired now from surgery, but they used to always say like he was so much fun to work with because he's just like me. Like we're a bit of a goof. Like, so he's a bit of a clown. But so he can be very strong and opinionated, same as me. I can be very serious. And sometimes when I facilitate meetings, like I don't like when people piss around. You know, and I know exactly what I want and I can be very direct, but also I can be super like nerdy and just dancing like a geek and whatever. And so he's kind of the same. So yeah, that's easy. Confidence and love.
And how was it for you as you navigated what you just described really, which was your own view that, you know, it's really important to be able to express your feelings. How was that journey for you?
Well, it's something that I talk about a lot now, and it's something that I work with a lot of people, meaning, so my clients, so I help the people who help the people, okay? So my clients are the people that help people express their emotions. I help people express their message, so I'm like a speaker coach. So I really am very close with and in alignment with the importance of people expressing their emotions. And if we suppress our emotions, it often results in health problems. And I people on my show have heard me talk about this a lot. So I'm a big believer in that. And so I really feel like growing up, I'm trying to remember, like I'm always saying to my parents, what was I like, you know, when I was 10, when I was 12, like, what do you remember? I even want to say to some of my friends, like, what was I like when I was in high school? What are your memories of me? I'm so fascinated by the humanity journey and who we are and how we evolve. My dad was really, so he was just such a hard worker and he was, I guess, not home a lot. You know, he's working all the time. And so he was either on the golf course or working or always, though, home for family dinner. We had family dinner every single night. And I've done the same thing with my family. So my oldest is 17. Like, I can probably count on one hand, like when we haven't actually all sat around and had dinner together at the table. So that's just what we do. So that's always been something that's been really important. I would probably be the most expressive of the three children. I've always been the one that has, let's just call it, the courage to call people out, including my parents, and to really say what needs to be said. which I don't know if I've always been like that. That's just my memory. I think I was a pretty easy child. I wasn't like stirring the pot or anything. But not until in my 40s, you know, not until probably year one or two of COVID did I really need to walk my own talk and up my brave and literally call up on the phone and call out my dad for some of the things he said. And again, without getting too personal, I think that was such a big moment for me. Not until I was in my late 40s, right? Did I actually have the need. Like there was never really a situation where I needed to. And that was a big milestone for me, walking my talk in that way.
Well, I am certain that many listeners' ears will prick up at this because so many of us have had challenges around communicating different views, shall we say, from what became a certain narrative or conventional line of thinking. I mean, how did you navigate that? Because it sounds like you've navigated, well, how have you navigated that? How has that been for you?
I would say we've gotten closer, which is sometimes the case. You know, when you have maybe you and a friend get in a little bit of a fight over whatever the reason is. And sometimes because you then have a heart to heart, your connection, your relationship deepens, right? Rather than being surfacey and think, you know, like, should we go to the movie? What time is it at? Yeah. You know, so suddenly you're having deeper conversations. And I feel like that's what happened with me and my dad in the last 4 years, because we were so polar opposite. You have to remember orthopedic surgeons, so not surprising. And we'd been, you know, vaccinated the whole way through and all the things. So it was very confusing to him that I would suddenly do a 180. And well, it wasn't really a 180. I was never advocating before. I was always into holistic health and natural things. But never before had I thought about that part of health, really. And so all of a sudden, I was not only not keen, but I was actually verbalizing it. And he did not like that. That was not a popular thing to do. And then, of course, when Stuff wrote that hit piece about me, actually, there were two of them, that did not land well. Because some people are embarrassed when their children do things that don't align with them. But the good news is I don't believe in embarrassment. And I'm happy for you to call me out in that if that's a thing. But so, yeah, I really just had to be like, if my daughter, you know, I was like, I understand that you're upset. This is what I said on the phone. I understand that you're upset. If my daughter was misrepresented by the media, I would also be upset. But that is what I said. And I said it quite like that, like very calm and considered, but very clear. And when you talk, so he's a driver. I don't know if you know these personality types, the expressive, the driver, the amiable, the analytic. So when you talk to a driver, you got to talk to a driver like a driver. And so, I am a driver, so it's pretty easy for me to do. So we're very direct, we're very clear. We can sometimes come across as overly bossy. So if I was to come across kind of weak and apologetic, you know, that's just not who I am. And that's not. And so I talked to a driver like a driver and it worked.
Wow. I'm kind of speechless at that because that's not a story you hear too much. It's not a story I've heard too much. Maybe you've heard that story elsewhere, but I haven't. And I think that really says something about the clarity and the strength with which you talk, Natalie. I mean, just in this conversation, we've never really talked in depth before. I mean, we've bumped into each other and been kind of seen each other around, as it were. But as you talk, I'm struck by your wonderful clarity of thought. You have such a clear way of communicating. And I wonder if that had an impact on, like you say, that you didn't apologize, you weren't, you know, you didn't whine about it or anything. You just came straight back and gave the opinion that you wanted him to know you had. And it sounds like he accepted that. Is that right?
Yeah. I think what I didn't do is I didn't go like, how dare you? How dare you treat me like, you know, I didn't have a tanty about it. But interestingly, Jerry, first of all, thank you for your comments. I get a lot of people telling me that I'm very, very clear in my enunciation, but also in my message. And you'd hope so, because that is what I help people to do in their business and life as well. But I'm, as I said, I've always been fascinated by humanity and in particular myself. So I'm very clear on who I am and I'm very clear on who I'm not. And I'm very clear on my strengths and I'm very clear on my gaps. And but I'm always open to learning. But sadly, on the other hand, I would say my mom and I probably took a step back, which is interesting. So she was the one that never said anything bad. In fact, she never said anything at all. You know, she was the one that, you know, they would drive by the Wellington protest and I said, oh, did you see that thing about how the police were treating the people? She's like, oh, well, they've been there for 2 days. They've made their points. They should really move on, you know, things like, so she'll make a few comments like that. But what I found is, as a daughter, I just felt like she didn't stand up for me and she didn't protect me.
So what is it you think that, I mean, because the listeners are going to be really interested in this whole subject, and I'm certainly very interested in how do people from very different, as it were, sides of the river build bridges towards each other? How do we find each other again after many of us were, I believe, quite deliberately and artificially pushed apart and made to think that we are sitting on opposite banks of a river? What do you think helped in that process with your family?
Yeah, I think I agree with everything you said. I think we were divided and intentionally, in my words, sick, stressed, suppressed, and separated. For me, it's really, really to reappreciate who that person is and to really understand. So not understand, understand who they are. So when I talk about my dad, I'm like, well, of course he's going to react like that because he's strong. He's opinionated. He knows what he thinks. He's a doctor. So he's literally been indoctrinated his whole life. And he was personally offended by the fact that I questioned something that he had a field that he was the expert in. And as he reminded me, sweetheart, you studied social science, not science. And so, okay, so I can understand that, oh, of course he's going to react like that because look at who he is and what he believes. So there's a little bit of forgiveness there. But then there's also the fact that we were able to come and talk to each other directly because of who we are and that there's that mutual respect. Then there's my mother, where harmony is probably in her top five if anyone does Clifton Strength Finders. Well, strategy is in my top five, as is futuristic and individualization and communication. Anyway, an activator. Harmony's in my mom's top five. And remember earlier I said I never really saw her get mad or really upset, actually, in my whole childhood. So I feel like because harmony is one of her top five, and that's just the way she operates, even when my dad was verbally attacking me, you know, telling me off and like all the things, she didn't stand up for me. She didn't step in. She didn't defend. And so for me, as a mother of a daughter and two other boys, I was just like, if that were me, I would be straight in. If my husband was treating my daughter like that, I would be like, hang on, you know, I would be in there. But here's the thing, Jerry. Again, because I understand who my mom is and I know, you know, the backstory and all the things, she's not a crusader, a warrior, the way I am. She's just not. And so for me, over the past 27 years, ever since moving to New Zealand, probably, and realizing that not everyone's here to change the world, Nat, as much as you would like to think they are. Not everyone has that role in life. Some people, they are the supporter. Like, she is the supporter of my dad, the doctor, and that's who she is. And I used to give my mom journals, and I'd be like, as a birthday gift, here's a journal, write your goals and dreams. She never wrote one word. It's like, Nat, not everyone is here. Okay, and for the same raise thing. And that, and just that alone has really helped me to appreciate people for who they are. We're all on our own journey.
Beautiful, beautiful. And you said to me earlier that it made a big difference to your relationship with your dad when he started listening to RCR. Is that right?
Yeah. So when RCR first launched, so this is over a year ago, and I can't remember if I told my parents or if they saw something, because when I got invited to do it, I remember Claire saying to me, Nat, you do understand you'll probably get pushback. And I was like, sign me up. Because when she invited me, I was like, this is what I've been training for my whole life. I've been interviewing people for 15 years. That's what people say. Wow, you're really good at interviewing people. I'm like, yeah, I've been doing it for free for 15 years. I should be good. So my dad, he was like, oh, well, look at you. Well, you're alongside Peter Williams and Rodney Hyde. That's a good group of people. And yeah, so he was actually quite positive. And I think I went up in terms of his credibility. I guess it was being alongside the credibility of those guys, specifically Peter Williams, that made my dad think, oh, well, that must be good. He didn't at that time know that it was, you know, Voices for Freedom would help to, you know, bring it all together and all that. But that really shifted things. And then when he listens to my interviews, and of course, he's very complimentary in terms of my interview skills. He's like, oh, you know when to interject and you know how much to let them speak. And goodness, you must do a lot of research. So all these compliments coming my way, which obviously, you know, feels good. But more than that, I actually want him to hear what my guest is saying, obviously. And more than that, I want him to hear what some of my fellow co-hosts' guests are saying as well. So sometimes I'll flick them a message and I'll say, oh, listen now, that, you know, there's something I want you to hear. And my dad has the app. And I always say to people, if my dad can get the RCR app, you guys, come on. Everyone can get the RCR app. So if you're listening and you don't have the app, it's free. Go and get it. Download it on your phone.
Definitely go get the app. I don't think I'd go anywhere without it myself. So Natalie, if people want to find out more about you, where do they find you?
Well, the easiest place to look in general is upyourbrave.com. That's my website. Up Your Brave on Instagram, Up Your Brave with Natalie Cutley Welsh on Facebook. And they can listen to my show, which is the Up Your Brave show, on Wednesdays at 1 till 4. My show is all about motivation, inspiration, empowerment, holistic health, and spirituality.
So listen, you referred earlier on, Nat, to Stuff doing a hit piece with you. Would you share a little bit about what happened and what went on at that time?
Sure. There were two occasions, and it was such a fascinating situation. I was in Palmerston North speaking at an event. I was speaking to the Property Investors Association. So I'm a paid speaker on stage in my purple fuchsia dress, rocking it out, talking about maximizing your superpowers to amplify your impact and all sorts of things. And, you know, so, and my parents are messaging me going, oh, you look so great, you know, because I sent them a photo or video or something. You're good on you. We're so proud of you. You're so amazing. And people coming up to me afterwards, oh my gosh, that was so helpful. Thank you so much. Next day, my dad texts me, doesn't ring me, texts me. Oh, wait a minute. Group text with my husband, my sister, my mom. What's this about you being in the stuff? You need to remedy this ASAP, kind of thing. So how do I respond? Old school, I get on the phone and call him. Hi, I saw your message. This is me, calm, clear, direct. I saw your message. I don't actually know what you're talking about. Oh, well, there's an article all about you and how you're part of Voices for Freedom and da-da-da. You see, I had done a webinar for Voices for Freedom because a lot of the, it was coming up to the local body elections, and I used to train people on how to speak in the media, how to do 4-minute interviews, how to do 10-minute interviews, how to be on TV and radio. So I came in and did a free webinar to help anyone that was possibly standing in along the Truth Freedom community who, you know, I, of course, I'm going to come in and I did that for free. So of course, stuff, they have people on the webinar, obviously, that aren't really Truth Freedom people. And they saw that I was doing it and they thought, well, we'll make a bit of a hoo-ha about this and we'll say that she's part of Voices for Freedom. Not that, I mean, I wasn't Not that it matters if I was or wasn't part of Voices for Freedom. What mattered to me that was my dad hit the roof and he was embarrassed. And this is when we had that conversation, when I phoned him up and I said, I would be angry too if the media misrepresented my daughter. So that's that conversation. And I can't remember if that was the first or second time. Oh, I think it was the second. That was the second one. So I said, remember what happened last time, 6 months ago, when I showed you that they can literally take what you say and spin it the wrong way. This is exactly the same. Oh, well, I thought you agreed to have the interview. No, on this occasion, well, the first time they didn't ask me anything. They went ahead and did it. But on this occasion, they had asked me to have an interview. And I said, yes, that's fine. Can you let me know the questions ahead? Or can you let me know the time that suits? But we never got our calendar sorted. So I never had the interview. They ended up pulling a few photos from my Facebook page. And of course, they're going to take the most unflattering photo possible. And there was this one photo where I'm standing in front of a little mini amusement park as such. It was at Sylvia Park, which is actually a mall. So in the parking lot at a mall, they had some rides for kids. And one of my kids, he was probably 11 at the time, and his friend, also 11, they went in because they were under 11 or maybe they were 10. I wasn't allowed in because I didn't have a vaccine passport, you see. So I took a selfie of myself with the thumbs down. And the way that the Stuff article wrote this article, it made it look like I was at the Wellington protest, doing the thumbs down with all these people behind me. And I was like, can you guys not see? And I even said to husband, can you not see how the media will take something like this photo and they'll misrepresent it just in the verbiage and the languaging of what they're talking about? I wasn't even at the Wellington protest. I would have loved to have gone. I didn't go. I didn't feel comfortable, let's be honest, leaving my 11-year-old at home. I just didn't feel safe doing that. So that's why I didn't go anyway. And my parents live in Wellington, so whatever, didn't go. But the point is, the media misrepresented. And I was trying to show them, can you see how what they did before, where they didn't ask me and they made it look like I said things that I didn't say? This is exactly the same thing. Why are you so upset? Well, he was so upset because it made him look bad because he's a doctor and he didn't want to be associated with Voices for Freedom. But I feel like we as society have come a long way. RCR has been around now for over a year. A lot of people have seen some true statistics come out that have made even them question things. So I think we've come a little bit of, as a family as well, we've made some headway, but I'm still impatient and I'm still waiting for more. I'm not waiting for more moments of to say, I told you so. I'm waiting for more realization for people to see how not only the media, but so many things have been misrepresented and that we really need to be much more discerning with what we believe and how that impacts our behavior and how we treat others in our life.
I could not agree more with you, Natalie. One of the things that this program is about is really sharing how we all manage stress and trauma and how we come out of it. I know that's a major feature of your show as well. And giving people ideas and, you know, some how-tos, I call them how-tos, how to do this, how to do that. Around how to survive. And, you know, one of the things that strikes me most, Natalie, and I think I've heard this on your program too, which is the importance of communication. I love the fact that you just picked up the phone and spoke directly to your dad. You know, that, what did you say? Calm, clear, and direct. That's Natalie Cutler-Walsh, you know, that's your straight in there. And I think communication as a way through stress and trauma. You know, very often I was going to move on and say, okay, Natalie, how do you manage stress and trauma? But I'm even more interested right now in your thoughts from your own experiences of the role that communication plays in resolving trauma for you. Have you got any thoughts or experiences you want to share about that? Because I'd be very interested.
Sure. So communication for me is verbal, and I'm a talker. You know, some people are writers and some people are singers. And so I feel like we all have trauma and stress in our life. It's just part of the journey because we're here to learn and grow. And life gives us many opportunities to do this. However, if we compress and suppress the emotions, they will turn into, usually they will present as physical mental health problems or often physical health problems in our body. So I do feel very strongly that it is critical to express not suppress. And how do we do that? Well, some of us, like I said, some of us are talkers, some of us are writers. So for example, when my daughter was little and she was having a hard time, she would write us a note and leave it under our pillow or slide it under the door. She was less likely to come and talkie-talkie, you know, chat it out with us, but she would write it out. And other people, you know, might write a song, or they might listen to loud music and sing along. Like, this is what she also does. In the shower, they take their Yui Boom, you know, the teenagers, they've got the waterproof Yui Booms. They take it into the bathroom or even in the shower, I think, and they just have the music so loud and they're singing along, you know, with Adele or Ed Sheeran or whoever. So sometimes expressing emotion is actually taking someone else's words and but really releasing them from the body through singing. And so I think that's critical that people do that, whatever form feels comfortable to them. And so some people will have a friend that they talk to, and that's great because that's still expressing it. Not everyone needs to be like you and me talking into a microphone and talking to thousands of people and sharing, you know, opening up the being an open book like I am today. But I think it's critical to mental health and well-being is to express. And for me, just reflecting on what we've discussed so far, probably because I am so clear, concise, and direct, it doesn't always land well with those that don't communicate that way. And that's, let's go back to my mom. Like her love language is quality time, spending time with somebody. And specifically, she loves eye time, right? So if you're with her, she doesn't like it. Well, obviously, when you're like doing the dishes, she wants you to be like sitting there, like present, which I totally appreciate. And so same thing on the phone, she'd much rather FaceTime than phone call. And I'm like, I just want to get things done. Like, can we just like have a phone call while I'm walking my dog, you know? So, but then I go, no, Nat, you know, she loves quality time. So it's really, that's like, so I'm trying to communicate in her language, and her language is not clear, direct, and concise. You know, she, sometimes when I'm talking to her, she goes, why are you getting so aggressive? I'm like, I'm not getting aggressive. I'm just really passionate about what I'm talking about. She's like, I feel like I'm in trouble. And my sister says the same thing. Sometimes I feel like I'm in trouble when I talk to you because I get so, right? I'm so clear. And also, especially with my sister, who, by the way, is also a doctor. My uncle is also a doctor. My brother-in-law is also a doctor. Welcome to my life. And yeah, she'll say, I feel like you're getting really mad at me. I'm like, no, I'm not mad at you. It's just the whole medical system. So I think coming back, what is my point? My point is it's so important for us to know our go-to method of communication and our default setting. And of course, as we all know, when our strength goes into overdrive, it becomes a weakness. So when I get super like pumped about something, either super excited or super angry, fired up, I can definitely come across as bossy, too overly opinionated, very aggressive. And that's what my sister and my mom, who are more softy type people, so I need to dial it down. And that's where I need to, or dial up my nurturing side, because it is there, but sometimes my more assertive side dominates.
I do love the way you talk about yourself and your personality as having almost like multiple voices, but ultimately, whatever your preferences, your go-to voices, if you like, within you. I love the fact that you can talk about, yeah, well, I just have to sometimes, you know, dial down that bit and dial up that bit. And I can very much relate to that because in the work I do, I meet different people all the time. Everybody's different. And I find myself finding parts of me that can, as it were, relate. And to, it's not that I'm not being myself, it's just that I am finding voices within me that can cross that bridge. Again, this idea that we're sometimes I think of a chasm between all people, that it is a miracle that humans understand each other at all. Our capacity for reaching across and understanding and making connection. I think of it like a chasm, and that we're building rope bridges across. And so we're hurtling ends of ropes across at each other. And then we kind of grabbing hold of each other's bits of rope, and then we're weaving them up, and then we're throwing another piece back and finding the bits of us that can, as it were, open a pathway, open a bridge between two souls, two separate beings. This is This fascinates me how we do that. And I think I'm reflecting really on the way in which you talk, and I like it because you talk as if you're in control, which I believe, by the way, but that we are in control of how we talk to people and that we can bring out bits of us that can, as it were, smooth the transactions between us. And there are other bits of me that might not smooth those transactions. But I can just say, well, you shush down a little bit, that voice over there. You know, we don't need you right now. You go and play in the sandpit, you know. And I bring out the voice in me that says, oh, yeah, well, we can talk. And this is the rope that we can meet each other across the chasm. I don't know why I'm burbling on about this, but when I talk with you, Natalie, I find myself inspired around the issue of communication.
Well, you know, traditional communication languaging would talk about how we want to be in rapport with someone, right? We want to be in rapport. And I'm more kind of a little bit more woo-woo and spiritual. So the way I like to look at it is something Sage Levine talks about, which is the four archetypes. And we all have all four in us. And at certain times, I use the phrase, we want to sometimes call in these different aspects of ourselves or dial up or dial down. And so very much, here they are. I'll tell you the four of them. The visionary, the motivator, the truth teller, the nurturer. Everyone has all four in them. And there'll be two that naturally bubble to the top as your go-to way of being. So for me, easy, truth teller, motivator, right? So naturally, it's very easy for me to speak my truth, to say what I want, to say it clearly, to interview people, to seek their knowledge out. Also motivator, like I'm such a, like, you got this, come on girls, we can do it, you know, motivator. However, sometimes I'm like, okay, Nat, it's time to call on your nurturer. You need to like be a little bit more nicey-nicey. Like I'll literally be texting someone. Like this is a great example. I'll text someone like, okay, here's the Zoom link for the interview. And then I'll soften it, right? I'll dial up my nurturer. So excited to chat with you. Here's the Zoom link for the interview. So I'll literally soften my message because I'm such a truth teller. And then other times I'll be like, okay, I'm such a truth teller and I'm a motivator, but I really want to call on my visionary. So when I talk to someone, instead of saying, what are your goals? I'll say, what is your vision for your business? Different energy, right? Different question. So I guess what I'm saying here is sometimes when I communicate with my mom, it's like, okay, Nat, dial down the truth teller. Like we know you've got tons to say. We know you're really clear on what you want and all the things, but maybe dial up the nurturer and maybe dial up the visionary. Like, hey, mom, you know, what do you want to do like on our Christmas holiday that, you know, we're going to get together at Christmas? Like, what are some things you want to do when we get together? And she'll tell me all about it. So I don't know if that helps, but that's the way I like to look at it with the four archetypes. And when we can understand our natural two ways of being, those are the go-tos. They serve me well. However, at times I'm going to want to dial up or call in these other aspects of myself. We all have them all in us, all four.
Beautiful. What a lovely description. So valuable. I think many listeners will really appreciate you sharing those four archetypes of the visionary, the motivator, the truth teller, and the nurturer. Have I got the nurturer right at the end? Yeah, beautiful.
You're on it.
What gets you through difficult times? I'd love to finish off with that as our last little chat, really. What helps you the most when you are struggling?
Well, there's one area that we haven't talked about, and I think I can weave it in here. What gets me through difficult times is knowing we are all here to learn and grow, which I think I've said three times. This is the third time I said it. And because I really believe that, you know, when my son was six and over a period of 3 months, all of his hair fell out. And I went to talk to the teacher and I couldn't even talk because I was just going to cry, you know? But what helped me through that is like, oh, we are all here to learn and grow. Flashback 4 years before that, when we had the Christchurch earthquake, and some of my followers and listeners know that my house was in the red zone. My husband lost his job an hour before the earthquake. And then I had a baby the next day. With no running water, no power, and we couldn't live there. So that was probably one of the biggest challenges as such. But one of the things that helped me through that is I just was very clear, very calm, and very direct in the way that we handled that situation. But also knowing like, oh, and then we ended up in Auckland and wouldn't life have been easier because we'd already paid off the mortgage and in Christchurch and prices were cheaper and we had to start over and all the things. But knowing that we are all here to learn and grow, and life is basically gives you a sushi train of invitations and opportunities. And some of them you don't necessarily want. You don't choose them. Some of them you do choose, like me going, I'm going to move to Canada. I'm going to move to New Zealand at the age of 23 where I don't, you know, or, right? That was a choice. But some things choose us. And so I think what helps me through the tricky times is to know that we're here to learn and grow. And I also want to say, I don't have it all figured out. So when I sit here talking about the archetypes and my parents, that's fine. But in the confines of my own home, the hardest challenge is my husband and I are, as you know, on polar opposite pages of the COVID and all of the scenarios, all of the things that relate to that and don't relate to that. And so I just constantly every day have to remind myself, Annette, we are all on a different path. We are not all here for the same lessons and the same journey. And so sometimes for me, dialing down my truth teller and dialing up my nurturer is very intentional and not easy for me. It's much easier to be to do what we naturally do. But I think it's going to be more effective and more helpful for my kids and myself to really lean into that vision. How do I want things to be in my family? Not how are they and what am I not happy with? And who doesn't agree with what I think, you know? So it's like, lean into your visionary. How do you want things to be? How harmonious? And what does it look like? And what does it feel like? And what are you doing? And right? Rather than, you know, why doesn't he just wake up? Which is an easy way to do. So yeah, that's what gets me out of bed, is we're all here to learn and grow. And sometimes we don't choose those challenges, but they're heading us towards helping us to be who we're born to be. I truly believe that.
Well, Natalie Cutler-Walsh, on that wonderful note of hope and positivity, I just want to say thank you so much for sitting in the psychotherapist chair with me, Jerry Pives. I've really appreciated this conversation, and I'm certain that the listeners will feel like I do, really, which is that not only do we know a little bit more about you, a lot more about you, but also we can all benefit from that clarity that you bring to so many of your issues that your radio show is about, that you share so generously of yourself. So I want to say a really big thank you for all that you do and all that you share, Natalie.
Thank you, Jerry. It's very refreshing to be on the other side of the mic. You know, I'm usually the host like you and drawing out the wisdom of my guests, although I definitely still chip in with a few of my own thoughts and experiences, but it's just really nice to reflect. And you know, I didn't have any notes. I had like a blank piece of paper because I just wanted to be really fluid and just see what came out. And I love your questions. And I mean, what a world it would be if everyone, even in their own time, answered all of these questions you were asking me today. And maybe like just sat with a close friend and had the friend ask them, it would be quite a different energy, quite a different vibration of the world that we live in.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.